Good day and welcome to the Anika Financial Europe Q3 Results Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Chris Ross Roberts. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Anika Financial Europe S.A. decaf rate quarterly investor presentation for the nine-month period ended the 30th of September 2017. As set out on page two of the presentation, Justin, Tim, and I will take you through the presentation, and then we will open the line to Q&A session at the end. In addition to the Q&A session, please remember that you can send any questions through to info@anikafe.com or through the website at www.anikafe.com, where we'll endeavor to reply to them as soon as we can. Details are also found at the end of this presentation. Before we begin, can I please draw your attention to the disclaimer on page one of the presentation, which highlights that the presentation is used solely for informational purposes and cautions against any forward-looking statements, and that by attending this call and reviewing the presentation, you're agreeing to the limitations set out on page one of the presentation. I'd like to start by turning to page four, basis of preparation of the financial statements, before handing over to Justin. The results we have presented today are the combined results of both the portfolio business and Anika Financial Europe for the nine months ended the 30th of September 2017. The financial statements for Anika Financial Europe, also published today, cover the period from incorporation, being the 28th of June 2017 to the 30th of September 2017, and as such, are the first set of financial statements for the legal entity, Anika Financial Europe S.A. The acquisition of the portfolio business was completed by Anika Financial Europe on the 21st of July 2017. As such, the financial statements only recognize revenue and collections from that date, notwithstanding the fact that the transaction was based on fair values at the 30th of June 2017. Cash collected in the 20 days to the 21st of July 2017 has been treated as predetermination cash and deducted from the fair value in determining the opening balance sheet within the financial statements, and is not included in collections or revenue in the financial statements. In addition, as there was no prior period for the legal entity, Anika Financial Europe, there are no comparatives in the financial statements published today. Therefore, in order to provide bondholders and other interested parties with true comparative data for the full 3 months to September, then 9 months to 30 September 2017, this presentation includes the results for the full 3 to 9 months by combining the results of the portfolio business together with the results of AFE, including cash collections for the first 20 days. A reconciliation of the presentation to the financial statements is excluded in the appendix. I'll now hand over to Justin, who will start by covering the highlights on page five. Justin.
Thanks, Chris, and good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I think as you'll see in this presentation going forward, the plan we set out at the time of issuance in July is very much on track. We've had strong collections performance continuing over the quarter, marginally ahead of our forecast. The key financial metrics are showing positive trends, with EBITDA up over 50% against comparative period and on track against business plan. And our low-cost operating model, supported by a continued investment in our digital platform, which supports the investment team here in London, as well as our engagement with servicing partners across Europe. We've also seen no slowdown in pipeline, with over €7.7 billion face value, euro billion face value reviewed across our five core geographies since the start of Q3 alone. On the back of this, we completed a new portfolio acquisition, which was signed post-quarter end on September 30th, with one further acquisition now in exclusivity and a very strong pipeline remaining to year-end. We successfully closed the first leg of a Spanish transaction with a follow-on purchase to be completed in early 2018. These portfolios consist of predominantly secured SME loans, as well as real estate assets that are already foreclosed but not yet sold, as well as a small balance of unsecured loans. I think reflecting the variety of asset types we continue to target. The wider pipeline at year-end includes at least one more expected secured SME acquisition, which is now in exclusivity in another of our core geographies. And without question, the European debt purchase market does remain competitive. However, our well-established geographic diversification is enabling us to continue to deploy capital selectively across a range of asset types, maintaining rigorous discipline in pricing. I'd highlight we have currently still relatively low exposure to the UK and consumers generally, and a heavily collateralized book overall, as we maintain what we see as a defensive approach in not only pricing new acquisitions, but in continuing to manage out our current portfolio. As ever, the fourth quarter remains traditionally a very busy period, both for expected capital deployment, as you see beginning to take shape, as well as in expected collections. At this point, I'll turn it back over to Chris to go through some of the financial highlights.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. If you can turn to page 6, financial highlights for the 9 months to the 30th of September 2017. I'm pleased to report, as you heard from Justin, that strong momentum has continued, and we are on track seeing growth across a number of key financial metrics. In fact, we're actually marginally ahead of our original business plan for the period ended 30th September 2017. Revenue in the 9 months to 30 September has grown 22.4% to €60 million compared to the same period in the prior year, with core collections growing at a faster rate of 30.3%, €75.8 million for the 9 months to 30 September. The drop in total operating cost ratio, which excludes non-recurring costs associated with the acquisition of the portfolio business, decreased from 32% for the 9 months to September 17 to 27.6% in the 9 months. And this, together with strong collections, has driven a jump in our normalised adjusted EBITDA to $53.4 million and normalised adjusted EBITDA margin of 70.6%. I think it's worth noting that the operating cost ratio we refer to is the total operating costs, excluding non-recurring items, rather than the cost-to-collect ratio, and it includes all overheads in the business. Our relatively low and variable overhead structure results in an overall higher margin. In summary, AFE's total operating costs are market-leading and make use of an extensive digital platform to assist in pricing and performance management of the portfolio. Furthermore, part of the increase in margin is driven by strong collections on a performing book that has a low cost to collect, but it also reflects the maturity of the book acquired by AFE, where costs have been invested and expensed in advance of receiving collections. Turning to page 7, growth in collections and revenue, you can see the graphic representation of growth in gross collections, revenue, and movement in ERC over time. The historic period includes some asset sales portfolios, which will not be the strategy on the go-forward basis. Now the business has a new capital structure, another closed fund capital structure. This should allow the business to grow over the medium term. In the first half, we deployed capital of $40 million, acquiring an attractive Italian portfolio, which is a mix of secured performing and non-performing loans. We've not deployed any capital in Q3, and have seen a small drop in ERC to $464.5 million at the 30th September 2017, from $473.4 million at the 30th September 2016. Subsequent to the end of the quarter, as you've heard from Justin, we've signed a contract to purchase a secured portfolio in Spain, which will complete in two tranches, $37 million this financial year and the balance in 2018. We have an attractive pipeline in the run-up to the year-end, and Justin will go into this in more detail later on in the presentation. Turning to page 8, we set out the ERC bridge from December 2016 to September 2017. ERC increased by $10 million as a result of ERC roll forward and the June revaluation, offset by collections and purchases. Overall, we see a modest increase on ERC of €4.5 million during that period. If you take the left-hand side of the graph, you'll see the opening ERC at the 31st of December at €460 million. Since that date to the 30th of September, 65.9 million of ERC has been added through a portfolio acquisition in March 17, and 75.1 million has been collected. This is the aggregate of actual attributable collections for the 6 months to June, plus a forecast of collections for Q3, in total 74.2 million, plus the overperformance of collections of £900,000 achieved this quarter. Extending the forecast for the additional quarter since December 16, so we have a new 84-month period, has added €6 million. Each half year, so the most recent being in June 2017, a detailed asset-by-asset underwriting is performed on all portfolios, and this exercise resulted in an aggregate increase in overall ERC of £4 million, known as the June revaluation, which we previously reported last quarter. And that was notwithstanding that collections in quarter two were again ahead of forecast. Closing ERC at the end of September was therefore £464.5 million. We can now turn to page 9, accuracy in collections forecast. You can see that we collected £25 million of total gross attributable collections in Q3 compared to £24.1 million in the forecast derived from the June revaluation. Similarly, for the 9 months to September 2017, we're 102% of the December ERC forecast plus underwriting curves for new purchases. As in the previous quarter, overall performance of collections is marginally ahead of that contained within ERC forecast, which gives us a lot of comfort in the underlying ERC numbers. Please note, for those of you that like to tie numbers in, that for pages 8, 9 and 10, we refer to attributable collections, which exclude collections that relate to money collected on behalf of co-investors. Page 7 shows total gross collections, which includes co-investor collections. 84-month ERC always excludes the amount due to co-investors. Turning to page 10, which sets out ERC by year of collection. As a reminder, each quarter, a review of ERC is undertaken, and at the half year and full year, a very detailed asset-by-asset review is completed, and ERC is reforecast. The first column includes collections year-to-date in green, at 75.1 million. Forecast for the last quarter is 47.4 million. Traditionally, the last quarter is a strong quarter for collections, as legal positions are settled at or near the end of the year. As Tim will discuss later, much of our ERC is backed by collateral and cash in court, and whilst we're on track to hit Q4 at present, timing of certain cash receipts can vary. You'll note that ERC forecast for 2018 is higher than that forecast for 2017. This increase should lead to corresponding increase in adjusted EBITDA for the year. Please note that the graph does not include the impact of any new purchases completed post 30 September 2017. If we can turn to page 11, net debt profile of AFE. You'll note that the business has been highly cash generative since the acquisition of the portfolio business and remains selective on how it deploys capital. The super senior revolving credit facility was undrawn at the 30th September 2017. If we deduct cash at bank and cash held on our behalf by services, remitted shortly post the period end, less amounts due to co-investors, net debt at the end of the period was £283.4 million. A reconciliation of total debt to the debt shown in the financial statements is provided to assist you in your analysis, the key reconciling items being costs of issue, including the discount given on issuance of the notes and accrued interest. Leverage metrics are set out on the right-hand side of the page, and are well within incurrence covenants. All debt metrics are in line with our plan. Net debt to LTM adjusted EBITDA at 3.64 times is relatively low compared to our direct peer group. Currently, liquidity, together with forecast cash collections, remains strong in the run-up to the end of the year, where capital deployment is traditionally stronger than normal. I'll now hand over to Tim, who will cover the breakdown of ERC and gross money multiples. Tim.
Thanks, Chris.
Starting with slide 12, you'll see the updated breakdown of our ERC, where the geographic distribution is broadly unchanged, with a weighting of 72% in Italy, 14% in Portugal, and the remainder split across Romania, Spain, and the UK. As mentioned earlier, the overall performance of the combined portfolio was ahead of target at 104% of forecasts in Q3, with strong returns across the geographies. This was broadly based, with the only exceptional performance coming from Portugal, where we received some large cash in court payments around 6 months ahead of forecast. Italy, which is the largest portion of our ERC, continues to perform strongly, with collections very marginally above target. The other geographies were broadly in line with expectations. The diversification of our ERC across geographies and asset classes continues to be a key strength of the business, with a high level of security backing our current ERC of $464.5 million, with over 64% of the collections now expected from secured loans. And this is underpinned by a large volume of collateral, including over $45 million of cash in court at September end. At $45 million, it's worth highlighting that that amount of cash now sitting in courts or bankruptcies and awaiting distribution is close to 10% of our ERC. We have very prudent forecasts around the timing of these distributions. However, there is risk of some timing volatility at the individual portfolio and loan level. Currently, our exposure to the UK consumer sector remains very limited, and only through one performing loan portfolio, which continues to pay down broadly in line with expectations. The ERC on this portfolio accounts for around 3.6% of ACE total ERC at September end, and we remain comfortable with this level of exposure. However, the UK remains a market where we have a long-term track record operating in the market, and we may selectively add to our exposure over time as we see some of the current themes play out. It's also worth mentioning our existing Spanish secured NPLs have very limited exposure to Catalonia. The ERC we are projecting, which is the result of asset sales through foreclosure processes, only accounts around 1.3% of overall ERC. So although we continue to monitor the situation and its impact, any fallout should not have a material negative impact on the overall business performance. Generally, we are not seeing any changes in the legal or regulatory frameworks that would give rise to any material concerns based on our current exposure, nor do we see any noticeable macro trends going against us. In summary, there was a good performance broadly across our geographies, with continued strong performance in Italy and Portugal, where we currently have the largest portion of ERC, and overall we remain very positive on our core markets. Over the page on slide 13, overall gross money multiples have increased by around 2 cents over the quarter, reaching 2.15 times at September end. The main points to note, and as Chris mentioned already, we did not reforecast any portfolios during this period, in line with our policy of undertaking full reforecast of individual portfolios on a semi-annual basis, unless there are material deviations versus the expected performance, which was not the case in this quarter. Most of the increase in our gross money multiples this quarter is due to the roll forward impact, which as Chris went through on slide 8 earlier, adds around 6 million euros to our gross money multiples. And just to remind everyone, our gross money multiples are calculated based on actual collections to date plus 84 months ERC. Finally, to reiterate the point, we remain very positive on our core markets and our capabilities to collect and deploy capital in each of these markets. We do expect to deploy in most of these geographies in the short term, which should result in an even more, even distribution of ERC across these core markets. I'll now hand over to Justin to provide an update on our deployment pipeline.
Thanks, Tim. We turn to slide 14. As I alluded to earlier, the pipeline of deals across each of our five core geographies remains very strong, with almost $8 billion face value reviewed since the start of Q3. This runway is actually broadly in line with what we saw in the first half of the year, which demonstrates the continued depth of attractive opportunities across these geographies, and clearly no evidence of a slowdown in the overall pipeline of non-core disposal sales from European financial institutions. I think it's fair to say in the second half, we've aligned our focus on where we see the most attractive risk-adjusted returns.
I think it's fair to say we've had less concerted focus on unsecured consumer and more focus on secured asset types across both consumer and SME debtors. We, as mentioned, signed a new portfolio acquisition post-September 30th, and we're currently working on 14 different portfolio transactions with over $4 billion of face value. But we're only targeting signing at least one further transaction before year end. While we may exceed this target, I think the low conversion rate indicates our continued ability to be highly selective and not chase growth. Italy and Spain presented a consistently strong pipeline of transactions throughout the year, with 37 transactions analyzed across these two markets alone. In the second half of the year, we've seen a pickup in pipeline across both Portugal and Romania, broadening the range of potential executable opportunities available in these also well-known geographies. We are continuing to review markets outside of these five core geographies. However, I think it's fair to say that we continue to see sufficient opportunities in these more well-established markets, which offer more attractive risk-adjusted returns defined by where we have more data, extensive pricing experience, and refined servicing expertise. I think if you look at the way our pipeline is developing, I think we would expect to, as we've already done recently in Spain, continue to deploy capital, also disproportionately away from Italy, across each of our core geographies, which should result in the overall concentration to Italy decreasing, as we outlined at the time of issuance, where we'd expect to see a more balanced portfolio over time. If we turn to slide 15, talk a little bit about the outlook overall. We've already discussed the ramp up that we're seeing real time in capital deployment in the fourth quarter, which every year is a traditionally busy period, some of which is likely to sign but potentially complete and fund early in the new year. We can see this already in addition to the deals that we've signed with deals in exclusivity. We also have market opportunities consistently growing across each of our core geographies and across asset types. We have strong visibility already to further pipeline expected early in the new year, with absolutely no evidence of a slowdown in overall NPL disposal volumes across Europe. Interestingly, we're seeing sellers engage already for deals in the new year as they prepare their own business plans. Certainly, if you look at the renewed focus from regulatory authorities around provisioning, I think it's fair to say we've seen an even further renewed focus from sellers on planning for NPL disposals and an expectation of continued growth in overall volumes. I think the increase in competition, which we've alluded to already, has notably started to include several new entrants into the Italian market, including into the challenging unsecured SME sector, where we have extensive experience, but where servicing capabilities locally broadly remain less developed. I think a lot of volume remains in this asset type, but it's not an easy asset to service. And I think where we've seen increased competition, I think it's fair to say we bear some of the scars of our servicing expertise, which we've refined over many years, which perhaps is making us more conservative in pricing today. However, we do expect Italy to remain a key focus and long-term opportunity for us, even where at times we may need to pause in the face of increasing competition. We also, as I mentioned, would expect to continue to deploy capital in other geographies and see a more balanced approach across these five jurisdictions over time. We maintain limited UK and wider consumer exposure generally, where particularly in the unsecured consumer space, we continue to see the most intensive competition, and we continue to flex our comfort in pricing a range of asset types, including a concerted focus today on both secured consumer and SME debt. We also continue to invest in additional origination, IT, and servicing capabilities across our core geographies, and a significant focus on continuing to build our platform, which now includes a 15-plus growing team in India to support data mining, reporting,
and analytics, which is creating efficiencies to better focus our investment team here in London, as well as more deeply inform our engagement with servicing partners across Europe. I think at this point, we'll pause and turn it over to any questions.
Thank you, sir. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone at this time, please press the star or asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question over the phone. We will pause just for a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal. And now we take our first person from the queue, Jacob van Kalkrut from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Thank you, gentlemen, for the presentation. Much appreciated. Overall, the numbers obviously look very good. I think I had a couple of questions with regards to how this quarter can be assessed in your wider plans. I mean, clearly, you will look to purchase portfolios. Could you give us a target for the ERC portfolio spend you're likely to execute for the full year, if you have had a target in mind there? Also, could you please confirm the ERC maintenance level of spending? I mean, obviously, we have the numbers in the deck for the year-to-date number, but it would be just good to remind us of the full-year number, please. And then lastly, the leverage obviously has come down quite a lot. I just wanted to get your view on that going forward. I'd imagine once you start spending again on portfolios, I would expect leverage to rise slightly from current levels. Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you, Jacob, and it's nice to hear you again. I'll get on to the last one first. I think what you'll see in terms of leverage metrics, we're expecting quite a ramp up in profitability. So if you look at the quarter that we're expecting this quarter and the operating cost ratios that we've talked about, and then you look forward to 2018, where we're forecasting to collect around $135 million before any more acquisitions, there is inbuilt growth in profitability and adjusted EBITDA within this business, which reflects the sort of, I guess, the mature book of assets that the business purchased. So in terms of when I'm looking at LTM, you know, adjusted EBITDA multiples, I wouldn't really expect that to increase very much. We might expect a modest increase, but only very modest increases on the net debt to LTV ratio. In respect of your first question, you know, in our original business plan, we were expecting a modest growth in ERC above the 508 that we talked about in March. We're expecting, you know, 510 to 520 as a closing position. It's going to be very close whether we achieve that or not. And it partly, we only recognize ERC when legal title passes. So even though we might sign deals in December, unless legal title for those assets passes, we won't recognize it. But we should be on track to achieve that number. And I'd say sort of if we look at maintenance capital, it's probably in the order of, I mean, next year will be slightly higher because we've got a big drop of ERC. But I imagine that's around 75 to 80 million pounds, depending on the money multiple or asset type we buy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And now we take our next person from the queue, Michael Chakarjan from CreditSights. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for the presentation and also good results. I had a question. This is a bit more of a maintenance question. Apologies if you've talked about it in the past. When you're looking at buying portfolio purchases, how much involvement does it have with, say, the Anacap credit funds? Or, like, basically what I'm trying to understand is, are you guys quite separate in terms of your, in terms of when you're wanting to buy portfolios? Do you guys, is there competition there, or how do you decide to allocate which ones go into this vehicle and which ones go into your internal credit funds? Thank you.
Yeah. We're very much operate a one-firm culture. We have an investment team that's aligned in our approach to both origination and execution of deals. I think where we see the potential, we're not looking to compete, but we've certainly seen a number of very large transactions which would go above and beyond the appetite of Anacap Financial Europe alone, and gives us an inbuilt capital partner. Much as many in the sector work with third-party investment funds, we'll be able to deploy additional capital outside of Anacap Financial Europe. But any deal and any portfolio that fits the profile and the risk-adjusted returns we're seeking in Anacap Financial Europe, any of those opportunities would always be shown to the business, and the business would always have an opportunity to invest up to, obviously, and within the limits of its own capital, both in terms of liquidity and also mindful of overall concentration. So where deals become larger is where you'll see the potential for us to deploy capital further on a cap capital alongside the business.
And just to clarify, so the deal sourcing team is the same between you guys and your parent company?
We have a team we actually have a wider investment team that spans across not only our credit business but our private equity business, which maintains a focus on financial services only. So as a specialist investor, it gives us a very broad reach where we have a total of 32 investment professionals that are operating all within the financial services sector, and enables origination where we're speaking to institutions about non-core asset sales across Europe. And it's something we will continue to leverage for the benefit of this business.
Okay, and then you were talking about you'd like to see your ERC exposure to Italy come down. Is there a target you have in mind and a time frame? And then when you talk about other geographies, are any countries which you see as potentially more appealing, and maybe also the ones which you think are unappealing? Some color on that would be great. Thank you.
We don't have a hard target in mind. I think when we did the initial issuance, we always mentioned that if you looked at some of the portfolios historically we've had to sell, we would have been more balanced across geographies. So no, it's not a hard number, but if you look at the most recent deployment, which has been in Spain, we have another deal in exclusivity, which is outside Italy. We believe it will naturally begin to come down and start to reflect something more aligned with our historical business, which if you had dialed back and included back in the deals that we already sold, would have been more like 50% Italy in past years if we aggregated together rather than the 70% plus it is today. I think we always try to look at the most attractive risk-adjusted returns. We're big believers in maintaining flexibility across jurisdictions and not having to chase volume in any one. If you look at where we don't like deals, frankly, we don't like deals in any market at a point in time when we believe pricing is ahead of itself. And there's some evidence in the Italian market in certain proceeds and certain deals that we believe pricing is getting a little ahead of itself. I think we've seen that. We've seen that in the UK. We've seen that in many markets over time. But I think it's key for us to maintain engagement in each of these markets so we can be flexible through the cycle and adjust ourselves accordingly. I think it's natural at this time of the year that we actually keep our focus fairly tight, in that while we are always on the lookout for new jurisdictions, we have such a large pipeline in these five core geographies right now that I don't think it's practical heading into year end or a good use of our time necessarily to focus outside of these jurisdictions, simply because we know we can deploy capital in these jurisdictions in the short term, some of which will carry over, as Chris alluded to, early into the new year. I think, therefore, new geographies, which we don't have specific targets in mind, I think is something that we'll pick up the focus on again in the new year, but we, again, don't see anything likely in the near term in terms of geographic expansion.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we'll take our next person from the queue, Frank Lehman from Tilo Capital Berlin. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes. Hello. Thank you. And thank you for the presentation and congratulations to the numbers. Two questions. I had a third one that just got answered. One is the regulatory environment, specifically since you operate in what's called Eastern Europe. Any trends you can see that there is state intervention in terms of repayment of debt, like we had seen in the past in Hungary and other places? And my second question would be, you did mention in Italy and Spain you analyzed 37 deals. How much did you finally put money to work? I tried to figure that out. I came up with four. I'm not sure it's correct. Because there seems to be kind of a, there seems to be a very low probability that when you look at that portfolio that you actually invest in it. And what if there are only 10 portfolios and you have a probability from 10%? Will you then be ending up investing in only one or none? Could lead to cash accumulated in your company or in your fund and effectively money just been sitting there and being refinanced in the markets. How would you think about that situation? It might not happen, but I just want to hear what your thoughts are. Thank you.
Sure. I'll start. Maybe Tim can add as well. But first off, on the point around the regulatory environment and Eastern Europe specifically, so to be clear, the only country we're currently investing in, currently targeting deal flow right now in Eastern Europe is Romania. It's a market we're, you know, well established in. We've been investing for some time. We have two current portfolio acquisitions. I think we view that market and generally so far has been quite favorable. I would agree with some of the challenges you've seen elsewhere in Eastern Europe. We've reviewed many jurisdictions, and I think certainly the lack of an established framework for foreclosure, for example, has limited our ability so far to invest in some new markets because we've certainly not yet been comfortable, but that's not without trying. Often it takes us 12, 24 months of triangulating data to be able to move into a new market because the reality is no one has data, particularly on timing in many new geographies, and I think there's a little bit of trial and error still going on. But where we are established, which is only in Romania, we've had a very good experience over several years now, and we don't see significant regulatory challenges, nor some of the same political challenges you may have seen in other Eastern European geographies. And I think if you look toward Western Europe, Tim mentioned earlier, other than obviously we've seen a few more politically rooted challenges like the issue in Catalonia, which we believe is well contained in our portfolio. And in the UK market, we know there's been intensive focus from the regulators, particularly in the consumer sector, where we maintain very limited exposure at this stage overall, and obviously continue to monitor those markets on a regular basis.
I'll just add to that the servicing partners we work with in Romania in particular, they're all pan-European or have exposure across not just Romania, at least to several other countries. And, you know, in some cases, you know, they're very, you know, they're quite large servicing operations. They themselves, you know, are very well self-regulated. They want to make sure that, you know, anything from a regulatory environment that comes up, they're well ahead of the curve. So they're very sophisticated. They have very good policies and processes in place, which would be very akin to a lot of what we see in Western Europe as well.
I think on the conversion rate point, we see this as a strength. I think it's really important when we speak about trying to scale up our platform, and the digital nature of our platform means that we're looking at a large volume of assets. We're always aiming to efficiently price a large volume of deals. And I think the data we now have in our database that enables us to price assets across jurisdictions and asset types means that we can always filter through a large volume of deals. And I think we're getting better at that all the time. And then focusing our more intensive diligence efforts on a smaller number of deals. I think a conversion rate historically for us, if you look back over the years, has been around 10%. And that includes deals that we would put into some form of pricing. Obviously, we see a larger number of transactions that we may filter out for a number of reasons immediately. But 10% on deals where we've actually spent a significant time pricing them is about our run rate historically. So if you look at the fact that we're at 14 deals in process right now and aiming to close at least one, at least would imply that maybe 1.5 is historically about the conversion rate, and I think that's about right. And I think it's important for us to remain highly selective. I think there will be times that we'll exceed this target,
And to answer your question, if you look at that run rate, no, we don't expect to have significant amounts of excess cash hanging around for too long because we're confident in the volume of our pipeline. Nevertheless, we do think remaining selective, particularly at this point in the cycle and particularly in certain asset types and jurisdictions, is an important discipline.
Yeah, and just a round up of deployment. So, you know, our original target for 2017 was circa 100 million. We deployed 40 million in the first half. We signed deals worth around 34 million to date, some of which will fund in 2018. That takes us to about 74 million. We would hope that we would close, you know, 25, certainly get them signed up this year to get towards hitting our target of 100 million.
The other deal we have in exclusivity, which will not fund prior to year end. However, that would get us, you know, thereabouts our target. So we have, and we have, as we mentioned, almost a dozen other transactions in different stages of development. So overall, I think our confidence in including that relatively, what seems like a relatively low conversion rate and hitting our plan is still high.
Thank you very much for these answers. And good luck with the business.
Thank you. And now we'll take our next person, Michael Murphy from Wells Fargo. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, John. Thank you very much for the presentation. Just one kind of multi-part question from me, if I may. Just in terms of the quantum of new portfolio acquisitions for next year, should I be thinking about 100 million? Is that right? And just to be clear, is that paying 100 million for portfolios or buying 100 million of ERCs? That's the first part of the question. Secondly, could we talk a little bit about potential debt capital funding for that? How much of that should we think about being debt funded, and when might we see you back across the table in a meeting? And then thirdly, current net debt to ERCs are pretty sector leading and look very conservative, even compared to a much tighter priced peers. Do you intend to maintain that kind of level of net debt to ERCs going forward? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And good to hear you again. If you're looking at capital deployment next year, if we just put aside the timing of it, we're hoping to win around 130 million. So, you know, our plan for 2018 is slightly higher than our plan for 2017. So we'll be targeting, you know, around 113 capital deployed. It might, some of the funding might move out. You know, that we'd expect to, by the end of next year, see our ERC growing to, you know, 580-ish, you know, 575 to 5, you know, 600 in that sort of region, depending on the asset type that we buy. I mean, in terms of our net to ERC, we'd see that tracking, you know, at that level, maybe drop, increasing up to 62 or 63% from where it is today. But given our profit profile for adjusted EBITDA, I'd expect that to be dropping from where it is today by the end of 2018.
Great, thanks. And in terms of, and just the last one, the kind of funding aspect of that, when should we expect to see you come back a little bit?
It's very dependent. I think we should, you know, I'm planning to have sufficient capacity from the super senior revolving credit facilities, which we're talking to various people about modestly increasing that. But it depends how the markets open in January. And unfortunately, these things come along like buses. So, If it looks like a very strong pipeline in Q1, then we might need to come and have a conversation with the capital markets. If it's more spread out over the year, then we can probably manage it from cash flow.
Sure, but it's relatively incremental anyway. There's nothing transformative planned, as you've explained. That's super. Congratulations on the results, and I'll see you next quarter. Thanks.
Thank you. And as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, star one to ask a question over the phone. We'll take our next person, Nikita Fedyuk from CVC. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Thank you for the presentation. I have three questions on the portfolio that was signed. First one, what's the breakdown between secured SMEs and then real estate, roughly? And then in terms of real estate, could you please elaborate a bit more what exactly is it finished real estate, and finished real estate, is it like mortgages on that, et cetera, et cetera. And then third question is what multiple should you buy this at? Thank you.
Hi, Nikita, it's Chris. I'm not going to give you individual portfolio multiples, but coming back to your first question, if you look at the real estate, it was less than 20% of the overall portfolio. We accept a slightly lower gross monthly multiple of that because obviously the legal risk of foreclosure and the court process is seen. But the bank still wants to get rid of it, so we help them. There are some tax costs in doing that as well. But obviously a significant amount of the risk and work and cost of going through the foreclosure process or the judicial process has been completed. So it's a relatively straightforward part of the transaction for us.
I think we see this type of portfolio in many ways as almost several portfolios in one because we have a blend of individual debtors, SME debtors, and then the direct real estate. And I think the way we price the portfolio as a result, as Chris alluded to, is to look at a relative value and a relative return depending on the specific subsegment of the portfolio.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. And there are no further questions over the phone at this time, gentlemen, so I would like to hand back. Oh, excuse me, we have one more person who just queued. Mayank Girdar from Black Diamond, please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Thanks for the presentation and congratulations on the strong result. Just wanted to understand on the hit rate again. You know, you mentioned that the number of transactions you're looking at and keeping pricing discipline. Could you give us an idea of out of the 37 transactions that you've looked at, how many you actually ended up bidding and how many you ended up winning?
Well, if you look at the deal flow overall, you've seen that there's approximately 14 remaining, two complete, one in exclusivity. So if you look at the ratio of the 37, I would say about 80% of them we actually put a bid in on. So I think, yes, there is a certain amount that are filtered out early for different reasons. We might not have gone all the way to the final bidding. Sometimes that's also about managing our own chance of success. If we have early indications in diligence that we're not going to be effective and mindful of costs, we may be, you know, inclined to drop out. But most of these deals, we are actually presenting an offer. But then if you look at the conversion rate of 2 plus 1 in exclusivity, so we're at a, and about another 14, or I think that exclusive is in that, so 13 remaining. We would expect the conversion rate, therefore, to be pretty consistent even in each subset right down to the last 14.
Understood. So,
i.e. 37 goes to 4 to 5 and 14 goes to 1 to 2.
Got it. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And as there are no further questions over the phone, I would like to hand the call back to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
No, I think thank you very much for attending the call, and I hope everyone has an enjoyable break over the Christmas period. Thank you.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's Annika Financial Europe Q3 Results Conference Call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.